The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
There's No Waiting, episode number 471, Sheldon Gloam, Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous, 1998. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and pick up some of the great stuff they got over there. They got brand new stuff. The Fishing Hole Woven Throw is one of them we're showing you, but all kinds of stuff with the Fishing Hole with Andy and Opie Fishing. Go and check that out. You're getting pre-orders now. They also have a bunch of brand new t-shirts. So go over to Weavers and look around and see what they have for pre-order over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like you. The executive producer of episode number 471 is Ted Womack. So Ted, thank you so much for being here and for just supporting the show. Thank you for being here and supporting the show as well. I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting, and it's great always to have you joining me so that I can talk to you about the Andy Griffith Show. Now this week, we're going to be hearing an interview that was done back in 1998 at the Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous in Bradford, Ohio, out in the middle of a cornfield. So it was, that was last week as well. Sue Ann Langdon, if you watched and listened to the episodes for the last 2 weeks, those were interviews with her, Sue Ann, Nurse Mary. And this week we're going to be hearing from Sheldon Gloam. Now, he was Sheldon Collins is what he was credited as on the Andy Griffith Show. But that his real name is Gollum. I always have a hard time with that. I feel like I'm talking about the guy from Lord of the Rings, but that's his name, Gollum. So that's his name, Gollum. I hope I'm saying it right, Sheldon. If I'm not, I'm sorry. But anyway, he's a great guy. I got to meet him back there. This was the very first time I ever met him. And this was the first Mayberry event he had ever been to. He only, as far as I can remember, only has done two different Mayberry events. He did this one and then one in Birmingham, Alabama in 2000 that he did. So this is the sixth Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous. Now, we're going to be hearing from this interview. Now, the person doing the interviewing is Dennis Hasty. He was the host at the time of a radio show in the Cincinnati area called Good Morning Mayberry. And this was, again, 20 years ago. So everybody looked younger than they probably look now. But it's a lot of fun for me because I didn't remember a lot of this. Now, the audio recording is pretty good. There's a few places where Sheldon is a little quiet because the mic wasn't holding it close enough to him, but he fixed that. So just stick with the interview, and it gets louder and clearer and better throughout the entire interview. It's a great interview with Sheldon. After the interview, we'll be back, and we'll be playing This Week in Mayberry History with Randy Turner. And this week, he's talking about Andy Clyde. You don't remember who Andy Clyde was? You will by the time Randy's finished. So folks, this is a long one. The Sheldon's part is 30 minutes. So feel free to pause and come back and listen later. And then after Sheldon, we will come back and have the This Week in Mayberry History. So everybody sit back and enjoy yourself and have a good time. So let's join the Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous in Bradford, Ohio, and take it away.
Yeah.
Remember the one with Flip Conroy was going to coach the football team, and Opie was on the team, and he had to take piano lessons at the same time, and Opie couldn't cover both of them, so he had to get Arnold to cover for him. Arnold played the piano just, as Andy said, beautifully. Beautifully.
What's that?
This is Pastrana.
Well, actually, I never did play the piano. They had a real pro, but I got really good at faking it with my fingers.
Why did you call
him? We had to practice that a few times.
Why did you
right.
call him?
Thank the one.
So I guess we'll open up to answering questions if anybody wants to ask Sheldon any questions. Yeah. Now, you know, Sheldon also, besides the Griffith Show, He's in a lot of other stuff that we mentioned earlier. One that I particularly like, he's in an episode of Star Trek. If you're a Star Trek fan, you remember the one where they go back on the planet and there's a bunch of gangsters all around. It's called A Piece of the Action. They're dealing with these gangsters. He's the little kid at the beginning that shows Spock and Kirk where to go and how to get into the building or whatever.
That was also one of my favorites.
The title line, yeah. But any questions that anybody like to ask Sheldon, we'll definitely get him to answer them for you if he can remember that far back on some of the things he did. Of course, he was younger in them days. But you also did Dick Van Dyke Show. How many of those did you do?
Just one.
Just the one?
And My Three Sons and Mod Squad.
My Three Sons, huh? You know, I've just seen them back in April. The boys that were... Yeah, they're looking old, actually. Not as young as they once were, but they're not too bad. But and what else was some of the other ones you said? Dick Van Dyke and...
Big Valley, I Dream a Genie.
Big Valley, I Dream a Genie, yeah.
Time Tunnel.
Do you remember the Time Tunnel, which one you did, or...?
Yeah, it was James Garen. I played him as a kid where he went back in time and met himself, and it was called the Pearl Harbor Incident.
Yeah, there you go.
Kind of talk with himself.
As a matter of fact, I if I'm not mistaken, that was just on the other day on the Science Fiction Channel.
Was it really?
Yeah, they showed Time Tunnel, and it was the Pearl Harbor episode, so it had to be the one you were in, yeah. Of course, the Big Valley with Barbara Stanwyck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were talking earlier down here about how sometimes if you only had a bit part in a show, you didn't get to see all those big stars, did you?
Well, no. Usually, just you'd have your scenes with the people you work with, and sometimes you'd have like one or two days you'd be working with those guys, and you wouldn't even see the other guys.
You wouldn't even see them, right? Because we were talking about the Star Trek, really, basically, the only one that you even worked with was just Spock and Kirk, and that was pretty much it, right? But you say they did introduce you to all the other people from the show?
Right. Well, I kind of made it because I was
you were a big fan, huh?
So I wanted to take a good look at the set.
The bridge and the set and all that? Yeah. Did it look as phony in real life as some of it does on TV?
Well, to me, it didn't look phony,
yeah.
And now it looks phony, because special effects have come such a long way, but at the time, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was a pretty popular show. What do you remember about doing the Griffith Show? Of course, you did 8 episodes off towards the later, I think 8th season, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't you also do a Mayberry RFD?
I did a couple of Mayberry RFDs.
Do you recall those at all, or...?
I basically recall, I remember the first episode we did of Andy Griffith was Opie Finds a Baby. It was a really good episode, and we got a lot of fan mail. And because we had so much fan mail, they started to write more episodes for Arnold. So I continued pretty regularly for the last 2 years, and then they were considering doing a regular contract for me, which I was going to have guaranteed episodes, but then
to leave the show, yeah.
So then I did a couple of Mayberry RFDs, but then that just kind of,
I think you wind up doing some soap opera work later on.
Actually, I started out doing soap opera.
Oh, really?
The
Guiding Light. Yeah. Is that still on?
8 years old when I did that.
Is that show still on even?
Yeah, I think so.
The Guiding Light, is it?
I did that for about a year. We did that. We filmed that in Grand Central Station. Upstairs, Grand Central Station.
New York. Now, where are you from exactly?
Brooklyn, New York.
That's where you're from. Well, obviously, you sound like someone from Brooklyn, really.
Do I really? They were supposed to train it at it. So.
Well, you do. I mean, you remind me.
I got Andy Griffith. It wouldn't look good with a New York.
I can tell you from it. That's not why they changed your name, Collins, or just that your name was harder to pronounce.
It was too hard to pronounce.
Yeah. I just thought maybe they just.
People were getting over it. And
since it was supposed to be North Carolina, and, they didn't want that. I don't know, they didn't want a kid from Brooklyn, so to speak.
Well, no, the Andy Griffith didn't have anything.
No, the writers and the people in general, but of course, like you say, the Griffith Show, do you remember, a lot of people always want to know, do you remember going to the set and being on it and talking to the people, what'd you guys do in between the shoots and that kind of, did you, were you and Ron Howard friends?
Oh, yeah, basically, the way it worked was, we worked 5 hours, and then we had 3 hours of school, so Ronnie and I would spend 3 hours together with a tutor, and we'd be pretty much, going to school together, so we got to know each other really well.
Yeah.
And like I was saying before, we both love to play basketball, so they built this basketball court on the set for us. Yeah. And we would play, I mean, every chance we got, we would play one-on-one basketball, and he was a really good player.
Yeah, athletic type, right?
He was athletic. He played high school basketball. I played high school basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we got to be really good friends, and sometimes we would go out and, you know, play some pickup games, off the set.
Really? Yeah.
So.
Now, would you guys go and visit some of the other sets from the shows they were shooting at the time?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've read where Ron Howard...
Plus, they have the commissaries, you know, where, you know, everyone would get together.
Yeah, you would see everybody.
So. Would have lunch, and we'd talk with a lot of people.
So, basically, anybody that was a big rig in TV at that time, you pretty much seen them all the time, right? I mean,
see them or work with them.
Yeah.
You know, work with quite a few of them.
I can imagine. Now, the Russians are coming, which I'm ashamed to admit, I don't think I've ever seen that one.
You've never seen that one?
I've never seen that one. I mean, a lot of people love that movie, but I've never seen it.
Very funny movie.
Very funny movie. Have you seen that, Alan, or... Alan hasn't seen
that
yet. Parts of it, yeah.
Alan Arkin and
Alan Arkin, right?
John Paul Ford, Brian Keith,
Jonathan Winters, yeah.
And Eva Marie Saint and Carl Reiner.
Yeah, Carl Reiner.
Theodore Michel.
Wow.
Dad,
a lot of them.
Right, John Philip Law. That,
yeah. Hey, John Philip Law, yeah. I remember him.
But,
so basically, what got you out of acting? I mean, you just took a different direction, so to speak, or is it, you know, were you typecast as a kid, so, you know?
Well, you know, you go through the stage where, you know, you're too old for kid parts, and you're not mature enough for adult parts, and so, I kind of didn't work for a while, and it made me kind of depressed, because I had constantly worked from when I was, like, 7 years old until I was about 15, 16, I was constantly working.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of started getting into other things, and when I got into college, I started getting into science, and I really liked it. I was, you know, doing really well, and I really loved learning that stuff, and it kind of just kept promoting me to keep going in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got a few scholarships here and there that kind of helped me along, and before I know it, that's where I was heading. I was heading in some sort of career involving, you know, the health sciences, and, you know, I wasn't even thinking about show business anymore. So it kind of was a gradual thing. It wasn't a sudden.
Yeah. Do you ever get the urge, though, even at now, how old are you now?
43.
You're 43. Do you ever get the urge now to kind of, would you like to do something again?
Or? Yeah, I do. Especially, you know.
See, I think you would be great at something.
You know, you'd be reminding you, and every once in a while, you know, before I bought my practice, I was getting involved with things. You know, about 3 years ago, I bought my own practice. Before that, I was working for other dentists. So I would work for a while, then I would take off for a while, and I did some local commercials, and I wrote a couple screenplays, which never got produced. But I've, you know, tried to dabble in here and there, but since I bought my practice a few years ago, I've been so involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
I really haven't had time.
Now, since you're a dentist, we were talking about how I was wondering if people come in and you work on their teeth and they have no idea who you are. I mean, they probably sat and watched you that morning on TV, and they have no idea that that's the guy later on that's working on their teeth. You know, they have no idea. It happens all the time, I bet, doesn't it?
That's true. And, you know, it's funny because I have some pictures, you know, around the office of me working in different... you know, with different people,
right.
And, you know, autographs of, like, Andy Griffith around, and they just think I'm a movie buff. They have no idea it's me. They'll look at the picture and say, you're interested in movies, huh? And I say, yeah, kind of, but that also happens to be me in the picture. You know, so they get it after a while sometimes.
That's got to be weird. I mean, but do you ever have someone come in? I mean, obviously you're older, and you don't look like little Arnold, but, I mean, you do to me, but do they ever come in and go, God, you look so familiar? I mean,
yes, I do get that. You know, that often. And then I'll have some people, they'll come in and they'll say, you look familiar, and I'll say this, and then they'll start telling me my lines
right.
for my show that I was in. It's like, it's incredible.
Which, we were talking about that too, how you have no idea, you don't remember all those lines. I mean, it's just a job, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's hard to remember all this.
But they remember them.
But do you ever watch, you know, stars always get this question too. If you sit down, you turn on the TV, and you know, the episode where you're playing the piano, will you watch it, or you kind of shy away from it, or...
Well, I kind of watch it and shy away from it at the same time. Is that me? Did I do that?
So I mean, like, even after 30 years, you're going, oh, I wish I would have done that differently.
That's right.
You know?
I get that almost every time I watch. I see that. I want to do it differently.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they thought it was great. They thought you did a great job. They you know, print, cut, it's finished, done, put it in the can. And then the actors still feel like they probably could have done it just a little better. Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah.
Especially when you see it. You know, I mean, it's, mm-hmm. Each time I see it, I always want to think, you know, I wish I wouldn't have cut so fast on that line or, yeah. You know, given a little bit more of a pause there.
Right. Mm. Now, do you keep in contact at all with any of the stars from your past?
Not really. No, it's been many years.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, you haven't seen Ron Howard in years? And
no, it's been years. It's been
years.
I've seen Ron.
Right. Well, I mean, what? Well, would you like to see Ron?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him.
I mean, you haven't
seen him? I was talking last night. We had a little dinner, and he used to beat me in basketball, and I really want to play him again. I don't think I can beat him now.
You can take him now.
I think so.
Yeah.
I've been in pretty good shape.
He's got a little older. Yeah, you look a lot in better shape than Ron Howard, probably. So you could take
that
him.
That would be fun.
I mean, there's a lot of people left over in Hollywood that you would remember, that would know you from your work.
Oh, yeah.
Not only just actors, but, I mean, behind-the-scenes kind of people and stuff. So, I mean, you could go out there and see all them people. You never get the urge to just hop on a plane and go out there and see what's going on?
Not really. I don't miss Hollywood all that much. I mean, I miss the people and I miss, mm-hmm. you know, the sets and stuff, but I was glad to get away from
the
Hollywood.
Whole, yeah.
I mean, because I went to dental school at the University of Iowa, and I spent 4 years there. When I got back to L.A., I was miserable. I was like 2 hours a day on the freeway,
yeah.
and all the crowds, and...
Right.
I wanted to get away. That's why I moved. I mean, I just immediately left.
Yeah.
And about 6 months I lasted and we moved to Colorado.
So you're in Colorado Springs then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a nice in between. You know,
yeah.
It's not a little town, which I don't think I could, you know, really
right.
handle, but
you wouldn't
it's
want
far
to,
from a big
You wouldn't want to live in a cornfield like this?
I almost got stuck in Columbus Junction once, Columbus Junction, Iowa. I almost bought a practice there, but I managed to get out of it at the last minute. I don't think that would be good for me.
Yeah, I could see that. But anyway, you know, talking about Hollywood and this and that, do you think things were as bad? I mean, you hear all these bad stories, you know, Dana Plato from the shows that she did, and just, you know, how Hollywood child actors are having such a hard time and all that. I mean, did you experience a lot of that?
Well, I can see where they can have a hard time, especially if you're a child actor, because when you're working and then you're not working, it really was depressing, you know? It was kind of hard.
Because like
I found something else, you know? I found school, and I really enjoy going to school and learning, mm-hmm. especially science stuff, so...
I mean, did you ever go through a period in your life when you didn't want to be Arnold Bailey? You didn't want people to know who you were? You didn't want...
No.
So, I mean, you like the fact that...
I loved doing what I was doing,
Yeah.
I always enjoyed acting. I enjoyed the traveling. I enjoyed meeting people. When I did it, I loved it. You know,
uh-huh.
the only thing that I didn't like was not working.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much. But I enjoyed working.
Now, we were talking about how the Mayberry people first started contacting you. I was asking you, do you get much mail and that kind of thing? You said mostly from the Mayberry people.
Right.
And I guess some Star Trek people, you know, sort of... Because, I think if you went to a Star Trek convention, you'd be a big hit.
Well, I've been told that. I haven't done that yet.
Because you would be one that's never done it. You see what I mean? They've all done them a million times, but you would be like, you'd be fresh.
Fresh babe, huh?
Well, you would, so to speak. You know, you would be, I think they would love to see you there.
Well, I might do it one day. I know a couple of friends of mine have always been bugging me. They want to just take me down there, and they want to just, come on, let's go and say who you are.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
They'd be all over you. Anybody got any questions that they can think of? Down here.
You did the baby episode.
Yes, I did.
He wanted to know when you did the baby episode, if you actually got to meet Jack Nicholson. I'm sure the folks, they couldn't hear him, so go ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, too, because I worked with Jack Nicholson in one of the scenes, but it wasn't until years later that I happened to be watching the episode. It was, it it got on the air in Nickelodeon or something, and I saw that that's Jack Nicholson. And it's like, I never realized it was Jack Nicholson.
I actually worked with Jack Nicholson.
Because like,
you got to remember, at that time, Jack Nicholson was, he wasn't that big a deal. You know, he was just starting out like everybody else.
Right.
I mean, he was just doing little
parts. No, he wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, so it's funny how years later it turns out there you are. You know, any other questions for Sheldon? There you go.
Which episodes of My Three Sons did you remember?
There were two. They weren't very big episodes. I had relatively small parts, and were you just like Ernie's friend or something like that?
Did you ever do Dennis the Menace, or was that a little before your time?
That was before my time.
Before your time, okay. Now, one question I love to ask actors like that is, because it's always a great response, usually, and hopefully maybe you'll have one, were you ever up for a part that you didn't get?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like something really good, you know.
Yeah, there was two that I remember distinctly. One was, it was between me and Greg for
The Brady Bunch. Okay.
We were the final two, and they told me I went about three callbacks and two screen tests, and they said it was because I didn't have blue eyes that. But that was one, and also Summer 42. The movie Summer 42 was one where I was right down to the final one, and they thought I was really good for the part, but they wanted somebody who was a little bit off-looking.
Yeah.
And so...
So they got the... Is it Jerry Hauser?
I don't remember who did Summer 42. I don't think...
Was it Fred Silverman and... I can't think of his name either, but I know who you're talking
about.
But now you would have been a lot older there then, right? Summer of 42?
Right.
Because that was like in the early 70s, right?
Even for the Brady Bunch, that was after, I do believe after the...
Yeah, so you're talking, you were like 16, 17, mm-hmm. somewhere in there?
15, I think.
15 or so? 15. So Brady Bunch, huh? That's, mm-hmm. that's pretty interesting, yeah. Any other questions for Sheldon? That was a great one.
How much did you get an episode of that last week?
Okay, how much money did you make doing the Griffith Show?
I think...
And how many thousands do you rake in now?
Well, that is definitely not thousands, but I think the way the Andy Griffith Show was working, I was making $250 a day, I think.
Which, that's pretty darn good back in 1967.
That was, you know, for a five-hour day plus 3 hours of school. And,
yeah. I mean, that's a lot
plus
of
all my expenses.
Right.
You know, of course, you know. I think that's where I was going to pay for
it. Now, would it work where you get paid all that, and then when they would run the episode you were in, you got so much, right? And then you only got so much if they ran it a couple more times. Is that how it usually worked?
Well, before the actor strike, yeah, that's the way it worked.
Because I mean, you don't get a penny now, right?
No,
I mean they basically
but after the actor strike, I think they still do.
Oh, do you really?
I think because they changed the rules.
Oh, okay.
Since then,
yeah.
But I'll tell you, really, where the big money was commercials. I was amazed about that because I remember I did a Lucky Charms commercial. It was a voiceover. You know, remember they had like the leprechauns and some of the kids with the leprechauns. And this took me about a half an hour to do. And I ended up making about $35,000
on a
commercial. And that was, you know, back
And it was shown
60s.
For a week.
It was shown, well, no, it was shown nationally.
Yeah, but I mean,
quite a few
but only oh, a few weeks.
You know, in different spots. But
say
the residuals
month.
Just kept pumping in.
Out of dime.
You know. From that one
now, if you
that.
Now believe it or not, on video I have probably 50 Lucky Charms commercials from back then.
Oh, really?
Would you have any idea which one it was?
I remember Catch the Leprechaun.
Yeah, but now come on, that was pretty standard.
No, but I remember my voice. I mean, because I was.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to check it out and listen to it. Would you love a copy of that? When you,
sure.
Because you probably haven't seen it in a while.
I can't believe you said
that. No, seriously. Yeah. No, I collect, you know, a lot of old videos, which a lot of people do. And I've got, just hundreds of hours of nothing but old commercials. And I've got a ton of Lucky Charms commercials, you know, Frosted Lucky Charms, you know, and the kids would run. It's got to be you in one of them.
It's got to be you in one of them.
So that'd be great. Any other questions? This gentleman over here.
Yeah. How many other guys were on the set with you as far as kids? Did they work for like 2 at a time?
time?
How many other kids would be on the set like when you guys would be? Was it basically just you and Ron? Or was there
mostly
other...
it was just, you know, Ron and I for most of the scenes. Now, every once in a while we'd have, like, you know, we were playing a football game and there'd be other kids involved, but most of the time it was just pretty much exclusively me and Ron. But when we needed to be together, I mean, we were all together at the moment, whatever the scene called for.
Now, did you and Ron ever get into any mischief? I mean, were you guys, you know...
Ron was a really good kid. I mean, he was real straight out and brought up really well, and so
right.
And I was not bad. I mean, I was good too. So I think we kept out of trouble pretty.
But
good.
You don't recall really ever doing much like that on the set. No. Okay. Do you remember? Everybody always wants to know this kind of question too. Was there anybody when you did the Griffith Show? Was there anybody that was ever just real cranky and you could, you know?
Not on the Griffith Show. Now, there were shows that I worked on. Like,
okay, come on. Dick Van Dyke, maybe?
No.
Time Tunnel.
My Three Sons was a little rough. I don't remember the episodes. Maybe I don't want to remember. It was a little rough.
Fred McMurray?
It was a little rough with Fred for a while.
Fred McMurray. Now, I heard Fred McMurray of My Three Sons, the dad, if you don't know who he is, he would come in, do all his scenes, and he's gone. I mean, he could, you know, he would just do his little, you know, and he's gone. He would get other people. He wouldn't even, I'm trying to see, how can I explain it? Okay, like if you and I are doing a scene and they're shooting me talking and I'm talking to you, well, he wouldn't even be talking to the person who was in the scene. You see what I mean? He'd get some stand-in to come.
Standard.
I mean, was that just pretty much standard, though? Or?
No, usually you would have, like, you do like an over-shoulder shot where, you know, you have a close-up and you'd have the other actor off stage. Mm-hmm. Running lines with you while you're doing the close-up, and you usually be the other actor because you want that continuity. You know?
But I always heard Fred McMurray was like, you know, I'll come in and do my scenes and I'm gone. You know,
I wouldn't surprise you. I don't remember that particular episode, but I know we had some conflict there.
Fred McMurray, good old Mr. Douglas, huh? Was that his name? Yeah, Douglas. Anybody else for Sheldon?
Was you on that episode with Elby when he killed that baby bird? But that slingshot?
No, that was.
Yeah, the episode where Opie killed the little bird.
Quite a bit before.
That was a lot before.
Right?
I was more in the last couple of years in the color episodes.
Right.
But you did some black and white TV shows, I'm sure, didn't you, somewhere? But you had been pretty young, right?
Well, The Guiding Light, I think, was when I was doing it, was black and white.
Yeah, it was. There is no color Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. Right. So Dick Van Dyke would have been pre-Mayberry.
You know, they were all right. I think it was pre-Mayberry, but they were all very close. I mean, because like I said,
when they were changing over the color and all that
was working. So it was kind of gets blurred as to which came first.
Yeah. Well, even TV commercials too. A lot of times you'd be watching a color television show, and a commercial would come on and be black and white because it wasn't shot in color. Question.
Do you have videos of the ones that you were in? Do you
own videos of your stuff that you did?
I have a few. You know, sometimes when we happen to catch it, you know, we'll pop on the VCR and tape it. So I have a few of the episodes. Actually, I gave them to my niece. She's got them now in San Diego, so.
You should run in the dentist chair and ease everyone.
That would be kind of neat. Think about it.
That's
if you put a TV up there,
put a TV up and all
you do is run your episodes. You say, see how great I was? Now, come on. How could you be
see
nervous?
How long it takes to get sick of myself?
Question.
A couple questions. One,
Okay, let's try to, first of all, are you a family man, married?
No, I'm not married. I have a girlfriend. We've lived together for about 8 years, so in a way I am married. But I don't have any children, so that's about it for the family.
Okay. And the second question was,
who did I admire? You know, I have to say, you know, as far as admiration, there were two things. As soon as Star Trek came on the air, I was a Trekkie. I mean, I was always a science fiction fanatic. And, like,
When I had the opportunity to audition for Star Trek and be on Star Trek, that was like the ultimate goal for me. I mean, I really wanted to get that part. I psyched myself up for it, and I got it. And meeting, William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and the whole crew was just that. That was definitely one of the highlights of my acting career. Barbara Eden was. I have in my office. This is one of my favorite pictures. There's a picture I'm kind of kneeling down. I'm right next to Barbara Eden. She was fantastic to work with. You know, I always had, I guess in show business, I was stuck. I had a crush between two girls. It was Barbara Eden and Linda Evans when I worked on In the Big Valley. And it was hard sometimes, concentrating. I mean, I was just getting into my own then.
Because Barbara Eden, she's not hard to look at, is she?
Oh, no.
Still isn't.
And she's sweet, too. I mean, really, really sweet.
Because she's in a...
Huh? Well, I don't know. It isn't that much different.
But she's Barbara Eden, she's in an episode of The Griffith Show. And Andy makes a comment to her. He goes, "Nature's been real, real, real good to you."
So, I can see you saying
you know what we're talking about. Anybody else got any questions for Sheldon? Down here.
Now, how long would it take to film an episode?
How long did it take to do a Griffith Show?
Generally about 1 week, an episode. We do, and that wasn't pushing it. You know, it was kind of relaxed. I mean, we could do it in a few days. But the first day, we would pretty much go over the script and all sit around, talk about the lines, decide if we wanted to change any of the lines, see how things worked, if things were funny, and what changes needed to be done. Then the next day, we would kind of rehearse it on the set, go through, different scenes, and then next 2 or 3 days, shoot it.
And out of all the things that you would do, like you say, you came in on the first day and you'd read the script, and the second day you'd do something else and all that. Was there any of those days that you just kind of, hated? You'd rather not do that as opposed to something else? Any of those days you dreaded?
No, not really. I enjoyed it. I mean, It was all pretty much necessary, and going over the scripts was fun. I mean, because you had a lot of input. You could actually change lines. If something wasn't working, you could, improvise and find something to work better. So that was...
So they would allow you that opportunity to do
sometimes,
that?
Sometimes, yeah. If we would talk about it and see if something was working or a comedy line wasn't working, why wasn't it working?
Well, if you and Ron were doing a certain scene, would Andy be there? Because he was pretty much a big part of the show as far as the production and whatnot. Well, I mean, would he be there while you were doing the scene or not?
Not when we were actually shooting the scene. Now, he would be there sometimes. All the producers, the writers, when we would all go over and talk about, the lines.
Right.
They would all be there. Mm-hmm. I'll sometimes give input as to what's going to happen.
Another thing people always want to know, too, did you save anything at all? Other than autographed photos, did you save your Star Trek script?
I have almost all my scripts.
Oh, really? So all the Griffith ones?
I have all the Andy Griffith scripts, almost all of them. Mm-hmm. I think maybe I don't have one or two. I got my Star Trek.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I do have is almost all the scripts of most of the stuff I did. I mean, I did so much stuff, I couldn't possibly have saved it all, but I don't even remember all the stuff I did. But
like in a case where you were playing Arnold, there was really no, part of clothing that you wore every single time.
No.
So it's not like you had a hat or,
No, I would just come, whatever I was wearing at the time, generally, Bring a couple of shirts, bring a pair of pants, and come on over. And sometimes they'd give me a jacket or something.
Yeah, so just to make it, okay. Any other questions for Sheldon? Anybody in the back or right over here?
The
Griffith Show, where were the sets located?
The interior was Desilu Studios in Burbank.
Paramount now, I believe
it's been a long time. It's been 9 years.
Is Desilu Paramount now? They've been bought out by bigger.
So I think it is Paramount now. And then they had a whole lot, pretty much just a couple of miles from the studio. In Burbank, where they had the town set up, we just go down there and shoot the town scenes.
Right there in good old LA.
Yeah,
right?
Back there,
right? Yeah, well, right.
So I went to school in Willoughby.
Was there ever any scenes in the Griffith Show that you had a hard time? That's another thing everybody always wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a scene that took you forever to get it down?
Yeah, there was one scene, and I don't remember which episode it was. This was incredible because You know, I had kind of prided myself on not having to do scenes over again, and that was kind of one of my advantages, is that
right.
You know, I got things right.
The word gets around Hollywood, this kid's good, right? You know, one time and it's done.
One time and it's done. So there was a scene, and I don't remember which episode, but what needed to be done was I had a pair of tennis shoes, I had to throw them in a locker, close the locker, and save my line. And every time I tried to do the scene, something went wrong. Like the first time, close the locker opens up. Second time, I close the locker, the shoelaces are hanging out of the locker. You know, third line, I slam the door, I start saying my line right on the slam of the door. So the lines, they're good, they can't hear it. Then the locker would open again. And then lunch. You know, let's go to lunch, let's think about this. And when I got back from lunch, it was the same thing. I mean, just everything kept happening. And I think that after about 10 or 12 takes, I finally
got it right. Huh?
But that was not fun.
That's great. Now, do you remember anybody else blowing a scene that took forever? Because, I mean, if you're sitting there doing a scene with somebody, and you're going over it, and then they blow it, well, you got to do it again. You know, every time, you have to keep doing it again, you know, so.
I don't really remember anyone. I guess I do remember I was a little cocky in that respect that, you know, I didn't have it. It wasn't my fault. Hey, I got it right, you know, so I'll be happy to do it again.
Well, I say doing scenes over. Now, when they shot the Griffith Show, if I remember right, they shot it with several cameras. So the idea is if you and I were doing a scene, they would shoot me saying it. Then they then we do it over, and they'd shoot you, or would they
they
go off the same time?
If you're a master.
Right.
No, it's separate times.
Separate times.
You have a master shot where they have both of us with, like, the camera there. Then there'd be the camera, like, behind you shooting me. You'd be off stage or over your shoulder. You would just see your shoulder in the shot.
Yeah.
And then they would shoot
you
over my
shoulder. We'd have to do the lines over and over.
Over and over.
Wow, okay.
Every time you
that's
have
great.
To do the lines over for that.
And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, that's why. And that's why sometimes they make mistakes, because they'll use the cut that you did, and it doesn't match the one that I did, and it makes it kind of off. You know?
That's where, well, what they used to call it, like the script coordinator or script role.
Script continuity.
Script continuity. I think that's what they call it today, is
right.
Important, because she keeps track, like, if your lapel is up or
right.
down, and you've got
right.
one scene, it's not. That's very important.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You happen to unbutton one button, and when you get your close-up, it's different.
Your hat's tilted a different way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anybody else got a question for Sheldon? Is that it? Okay.
Well, thanks. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
All right. Sheldon. Great.
All right. So there we are. That's Sheldon. Let's see. I'll get me back up here. There we are. So that was Sheldon Glome, and I hope you enjoyed that. Now, the audio, that was straight audio from the actual interview. The video camera itself, that was all straight from it. So I hope you enjoyed that. It was fun for me to see. Like I said, I was there standing right beside him on the stage and getting to listen to these great stories he was telling about seeing Barbara Eden and Linda Evans, and you know, that he was coming into his own at that time, so it was really hard to concentrate on what he was saying. So anyway, that was great. So next up, let's get this done, because we are running long here. I hope you're going to enjoy it. We got one more thing after this I'll tell you about, because if you stayed this long, you might be interested in what's coming up after Randy Turner's report. So Randy, take it away.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Character actor Andy Clyde was born on March the 25th, 1892, in Scotland. He first came to the United States when 20 years old on tour with a stage play, returning 8 years later to break into the film industry. Andy was a master of makeup, and so played both characters, young and old, and quickly became popular in Max Sennett's studio, which produced first silent short subject films and then sound shorts, all filled with slapstick. When Andy grew a mustache and donned a gray wig for a short film, he created one of the most popular characters in Sennett's films. Sennett launched the careers of Charlie Chaplin, W.C. Fields, the Keystone Cops, and others. He also assembled a bevy of young women called the Sennett Bathing Beauties, who wore provocative for the time, bathing suits in films and public appearances. Andy eventually married one of these bathing beauties. After Andy starred in nearly 200 short subjects for Senate, many of which were known generally as the Andy Clyde series, in 1934 he moved to Columbia Studios, where he continued to make shorts until 1956. He was so popular that by the time he left, the only comedy act who made more Columbia shorts was the Three Stooges. Midway through his work for Columbia, Andy became a naturalized United States citizen in 1943. That same year, he made the first of many appearances in a role for which he is well remembered, playing California Carson, the third and final sidekick of the Western character Hopalong Cassidy in the popular film series. Andy played the same character on the old-time radio Hopalong Cassidy serial from 1948 to 1951. Andy began dabbling in television with a guest appearance in a 1952 episode of Death Valley Days, but 4 years later, after ending his association with Columbia, he worked almost exclusively in television. His first recurring character was Homer Tubbs in The Adventures of Ren 10-10, a role he played once a year from 1955 through 1958. He also played recurring character Colonel Jack in Circus Boy, in which the title character was played by a young Mickey Dolenz a decade before he became well known as one of the Monkees. Beginning in 1959, he played Ben Adams in Lassie, appearing in 31 episodes through 1966. He also played a recurring character, Paul McBean, in 5 episodes between 1960 and 1962 of The Tall Man, a Western based loosely on Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. The Tall Man is an example of Andy's continued work in Westerns. He appeared in Wagon Train, Buckskin, Tales of Wells Fargo, The Texan, Shotgun Slade, The Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp, and others. In 1957, he began one of the television roles for which he is best known, George McMichael, neighbor to the real McCoys. He appeared in 60 episodes of the popular series from 1957 until the series ended in 1963. Andy appeared in Mayberry as Frank Myers, the resident of a rundown house who was being evicted by the town council for failing to pay his taxes. That is, until it was learned he had a bond from the town that meant Mayberry owed him almost $350,000. The character of Frank Myers was named in honor of Frank E. Myers, the production manager on The Andy Griffith Show. Andy Clyde's final recurring role was as Grandpa Jim Anderson in the television series version of No Time for Sergeants. The series changed the character of Will Stockdale from the incarnations earlier played by Andy Griffith in a live televised version, followed by a hit Broadway play and film, making Will less a bumpkin and more a font of unlimited common sense. It premiered in 1964, the same year another series inspired by Sergeants did, Gomer Pyle USMC. But those are not the only reasons the show didn't succeed. It aired in the same time slot as The Andy Griffith Show. Andy Clyde was an active actor up to the date of his death in 1967 at the age of 75. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
All right. Well, thank you, Randy. And I hope you're enjoying these reports. If you want to make sure you don't miss any of his reports, you can head over to the email. You can send him an email, I should say, at turnersgrade@gmail.com. And he'll make sure you can always see the things he posts over at the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild. turnersgrade@gmail.com. All right, folks. Hey, I hope you have enjoyed tonight's episode. It's been a long one. We got to hear from Opie's pal, Sheldon Collins was his name. We had several things there. He is actually a dentist, if you didn't pick up on that. He has a dental center in Colorado Springs. So we'll have links in the show notes for that. He was at this event, which was the Mayberry Squad Car Rendezvous. He was also in Birmingham, Alabama, where I got to meet him. And Kit McNear was there as well. That was Floyd's son. That was another event he appeared in. And it was a, it's just a lot of fun getting to meet him. He was a really nice guy, and I just really enjoyed it. Now, for you guys that are still here, I want you to shop over at weaversdepartmentstore.com, no doubt. So head over to Weavers and check it out. But we've been having people ask questions about having gear from the podcast. So I wanted to make sure you are aware of that. I've created a website over at T Republic is what it's called, where you can go over there and you can pick up a Two Chairs No Waiting podcast t-shirts. Now you can get them. The one that comes up with when you first go there is gray, but you can pick any color you want and they got all kinds of colors from pink to blue to red and green. They got all kinds of colors that you can pick out of the t-shirt. And if you scroll down the page a little more, there's all kinds of different kinds of t-shirts and sweatshirts that you can get along with kids' clothes. There's a phone case and the pillows and all kinds of stuff. I'll have that link there because it's at T Republic. If you go over there and search probably for Mayberry, you'd find it. But it'll have links in the show notes. So if you're interested in getting a t-shirt, they're $20 plus I don't know what the shipping is. And I have to tell you that I have not yet ordered one, or I have ordered them, but I haven't gotten them yet. So I can't tell you the quality. Reports are the quality's good. Shirts are $20, and that gives you something you can wear around for your Two Chairs No Waiting love if you'd like to. So we had these before years ago, and then I had to shut them down. And I'm bringing them back because people have been asking for them. I found a place that would actually do them. So if you're interested, you feel free. If you don't, no problem. Head over to Weaver's Department Store and buy stuff over there. All kinds of cool stuff there. Folks, that is all I have for you today, tonight, whenever you're listening to this. But I want to thank you for dropping by here at TwoChairsNoWaiting.com. I would love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415. You can drop by the twochairsnowaiting.com website, click on the contact button, and all the information there about how to get in touch with me. I love hearing from you. It's always fun to hear back from you because you hear from me every week, but I don't get to hear from you that often. So, folks, until next time, have a great Mayberry week, and we'll see you right here on Two Chairs No Waiting. Wow, it's the longest episode in a long time, 46 or 7 minutes long. Wow, we got to get out of here. Have a great week, guys. See you next time.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.